Hey, everyone, welcome to the Gundam Explained Show. I'm Adam Blue, and you're Steven, I think, still.
I'm here. Hey, thank you. Honestly, I love this hat. It was a gift from a friend, but I think it should look familiar to you because the voice actor who plays Amuro owns this exact same hat.
Yeah, he had in that picture that I got with him, Brad Swaley.
Brad Swaley. Yeah, I couldn't pronounce his last name.
I think it's that because I remember I had to look it up. but cool. Yeah, glad to be here, Steven. I know we had a pretty good show yesterday as well, and we're going to kind of continue on some of that because I think yesterday we were you had brought up something about mobile armors, and we were talking about mobile armor, like, and it reminded me of the ones from Twilight Axis, and I think I kept everyone on cliffhanger yesterday. I'm going to bring them up later today, on this episode. So we're going to look at the Twilight Axis mobile armors, and that's the cool thing about Gundam because there's so many cool things that, like, sometimes you'd be like, oh, what was that one from that one thing? And thus the video.
And there's not always, like, it's nice when you have that one guy that knows everything, but even in a room of Gundam geniuses, we're always going to miss something, right?
Yeah, and I think that's a good example of Twilight Axis being one that is actually pretty cool, but because it's kind of short and then people are like, well, it's not really a full thing, I think a lot of people just kind of missed it. And I only think it recently came on Blu-ray. I picked it up.
And man, I wish we had gotten that Zaku 3.
As
a model kit, like.
So they don't have a model kit of the Zaku 3, really?
Just the standard Zaku 3, not the Zaku 3 one custom. From,
yeah, Twilight Axis, because they did the Varlent, they did the Tristan, and I want to say they did another one.
Well, they also didn't do the mobile armors, which we're going to talk about tonight.
Yeah, no, that's pretty sick. One has a dragon tail. Yeah, pretty weird, huh?
Always a nice touch.
Yeah, but yeah. Anyway, what else will be going on today is talking about that crazy news that dropped about Sydney Sweeney being in Gundam. I want to kind of explain those details, what it means, and then Steven brought up a very good pick for a potential Amuro, if that's the case, and.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, and actually, because it kind of helped with this idea that they want, if it's going to be UC-based, they want the actors to look younger.
Yeah.
And so you might have to grab one that's a little older, you know, to kind of be able to play that part.
For sure.
And then I talked on your stream yesterday a little bit about that anime ego. It's anime IGO.
Which is a longer... lasting or a longer present company than even you and I realized, because I think they've been around since like 88. But
apparently it's the first one, and they released this. So this just came out, and it's Bubblegum Crisis, which I don't know about you guys, but growing up like in the 90s reading video game magazines, I would see the words Bubblegum Crisis and be like, what is this?
And the last thing you would expect is mecha anime.
Exactly. So I'm telling you, I go my whole life like that. And at the age of 41, I forgot where I was exactly when I watched this. I was sold. So good. I saw that the Blu-ray just dropped this year. And it even came with a booklet that has a translated interview.
Cool.
What's cool is Bubblegum Crisis is legitimately, and again, it's my opinion, but I would think it's a legitimately entertaining and well-made show, even if you don't like the stuff in it. Because you've probably heard of the Dominion Tank Police.
I'm not familiar.
Okay. That's also one of the first early, you know, after that first early period of Japanese animation, like Astro Boy. When they were starting to do it again in the 80s, Dominion Tank Police was one of the first ones that they were trying to get, you know, under this new company. And so I was like, oh, that's interesting to be kind of the first. Like, it must have been a big deal. I think it had more to do with the marketing and what it looked like. Anyway, I went to watch it, and I did not like it. I did not think it was good. And not even of like a, well, it's 80s anime and a cultural thing. No, I think I can look past that stuff pretty easily.
You kind of have to if you're a Gundam fan.
Yeah.
So
exactly. So I'm curious if others have watched that comment, or you know, you check it. It's free on YouTube because it's one of those types where it's not really on a streaming service, just free. And
yeah,
it's interesting. It has some interesting artwork, but it also has some unconventional anime that maybe I'm not familiar with. While the characters are all very anime-esque, the world looks like Dr. Seuss. I'm not joking. It's all like organic and detailed, shaded, twisty things. Like the buildings are like organic.
That's fascinating.
Fascinating. Yeah, because it's free on YouTube, it's probably worth checking out. Just because I'm trying to, you know, visit all those anime titles, you know, that I always heard of growing up, that I guess influenced a lot of creators that are creating right now. And yeah, Bubblegum Crisis is definitely that. And I know there's even sequels, but I haven't watched them yet. But
it's just the effect that the culture has on you, where it's like you have this prejudice against a piece of media or a creator because of what other people have said about them. And, you know, I don't know that we'll ever undo the damage of things like X-Play on Japanese games, you know?
Oh, what happened there?
Oh, just like, you know, back in the day on G4, like X-Play would constantly like dunk on JRPGs and stuff like that.
It's so funny you're saying this. I remember you told me that before. And just, it was either this morning or yesterday, I was just reading up on a PS2 title I love called Gradius 5.
Yeah.
And the X-Play review was trashing it. And yeah, I was like, dang, this sounds like someone that's never played a Japanese game before. But it, so
they even bashed the like Gundam versus games, like Federation versus Zeon and Gundam versus Zeta Gundam. They trashed those games. And I'm like,
so, you know, are you familiar with Victor Lucas? That he had the Electric Playground. It started in the late 90s, and it had Tommy Tallarico on some of the episodes.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So He still does his thing. He has his YouTube channel. And he even talked about that in that time, the late 90s. It was for programming or these companies. To them, they wanted the 3D sports action, the Japanese 2D stuff. And then even Sony had a mandate for a while. And it's funny because I guess this is more gaming, but Shuhei Yoshida, you know, has been doing the rounds since he left Sony, talking about like all the things, the mistakes and all that. But the one main mistake is their whole thing about not releasing or publishing 2D titles. That was a big deal in the early PS2 era, was they were trying to avoid certain 2D titles if they didn't have to, unless they were like an arcade port, like Guilty Gear.
Yep.
But anyway, that's for another channel. This kind of just goes to, you know, the back to, you know, distributing of things. It's very interesting.
Exactly.
And, you know, it's interesting too, to like I was willing to buy this. Like, so when it comes to anime other than Gundam, I have Gunbuster in this. That's about it, I think. What about you? Do you own any other than Gundam, any physical anime?
I do a lot, actually. You know, it's funny because as much as I say that I don't like anime, I only like Gundam, I have quite a bit of anime. I mean, like I have the staples, you know, Cowboy Bebop, Samurai Champloo, that kind of thing. But, you know, I also have like Trigun and DBZ and surprisingly not as much mecha as you might imagine. Like I don't have Robotech or Macross, like just
well, you know what, I think a lot of the really good mecha anime is kind of hard to get physically. You know, they kind of recently released some Macross titles, but they're kind of pricey, you know, they're like special editions and all that. It is interesting when it comes to the mecha anime, because either they will just be on a streaming service or just not at all, and then so I can see why companies like this are still doing what they're doing, because I feel like there's just a back catalog of just anime that never has had kind of that proper accessible release, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I would pick up a Blu-ray of MADOX, the one that's on. It's like a 45-minute movie on YouTube right now. But that thing is the animation in that is so crisp. If you're like a big 0083 fan,
it's that type. That's a good example of something I would get physical of.
Yeah.
And I think they do have that recently. Some other things, speaking of physical, I built the Mobile Suit Ensemble. I think it's called the Schwartzette. Is that what this one is?
Is that? I don't know if
I can. Am I getting right? It's the Witch from Mercury with the, oh my God, cameras. Okay.
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, just a fun little mobile suit ensemble. You know, it to me, because I'm not all into like this design, you know, like I haven't really looked at it much. It's fun to build it out of context of Gundam for a second. Like, it really, really does remind me of getting the gumball robots from Walmart when I was a kid. Like, it, I think that's what I'm finding the fun in on this.
Yeah.
And, you know, because this is from Witch for Mercury, it's more of a more recent release like the Freedom ones. And it's pretty amazing the technology and engineering they have in these mobile suit ensembles, which I think is why they're pretty pricey. So,
but that's cool. I mean, I like them.
Yeah, I do. Especially the size, because when I was doing rearranging, I just easily put them in a little bin that, you know.
They're just convenient little desk toys.
Yeah. Speaking of a desk toy, this week it's been the, what do they call this? The Amazing Zagok, right?
Well, the Amazing Zagok is the
with the Cavalier Afrit on top.
I thought the Amazing Zagok was the that's the one from Build Fighters. Yeah,
that's the Build Fighters. So what is this one called?
That's a good question. Is it called Lightning Zagok, something like that? I don't know.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Amazing Zagok is Build Fighters. Anyway, so listen to this. Gundam, and I'm not calling anyone out, okay? I just ordered on Gundam Planet, I ordered this, and then USA Gundam had the Cavalier.
Yeah.
It was separate sites, so I had to do separate orders. This came this past Monday. The USA Gundam one won't come until Monday. Just letting people know. I mean, and it could be because I'm in Texas. I don't know. Although Gundam Planet's in New Jersey.
I was going to say, I feel like it's a shorter trip to go west than to go southwest, but that's, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if people, and I'm curious about that too, because I do believe some people might have different shipping experiences, but
100%.
What was the other thing? Did I have that? Yeah, it came with a little sticker of artwork. You know how, like, there'll be the stickers of the artists from Twitter that make little Gundams and they'll throw stickers in. Yeah, they did that too, so that's pretty nice.
Cool.
So I'll do a full review of this Zagok when I get the Cavalier Afrit to put on it or whatever. I'm really enjoying this. This is like going all out UC, but then seed, you know?
You seed.
There you go. The one thing that I appreciate so much, especially as an action figure collector, is that when you create the additional claws, they're just detachable hands. It's not like you have to undo the hand to put in the other claws.
Exactly. Yeah, I love when they give you enough parts to complete the other thing, you know? I think a perfect example of that's like the Zaku 2 FZ from 0080, how it comes with the Type B helmet. Like, it comes with two different heads.
The RE100?
No, even just the high grade comes with both heads.
Oh,
yeah.
I don't have the high grade.
Instead of just having like the cap, it has like enough parts to make two separate heads so that you can.
Okay. That is cool, because the RE100 Masquerade, I forget what it is, doesn't do that.
Yeah. No, it does not.
So that makes it worth picking up. So speaking of swapping heads, this actually comes with, you know, the piece to swap with the damage. Had so much fun detailing this, even though it's kind of basic. But I love when there's already like molded in, I don't know, damage lines.
Yeah, kind of like the Doan Zaku, how it's got like the.
Oh, that's right. I need to get that one too, because that was what was fun with the Solari Zaku. I tell you, when a kit has all this like stuff going on, like exposure or like, I love. It was like with the Darth Vader. So I bought the Bandai model kit of Vader and had so much fun like painting just the little electronics, you know?
That's cool, man. Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, that reminds me more of like miniature painting, because obviously with miniature painting, you just get a single color miniature and then you have to paint all the details, but all the details are actually sculpted in. So yeah. you get.
I like that. I like that a lot. That's what I'd say is cool about this Seed Freedom release of the Zagok, is that they have a damaged head and it's where, yeah, you can detail it. And it just, I love that. But it also does another thing. So it comes with the Infinite Justice Type 2. Yeah.
Just the head, though.
The head and the torso.
Oh, interesting.
But what's interesting is it even says, you know, or you can buy the 144th version, you know, the high grade, to put it in there. And it's more detailed, but to be honest, the one inside is detailed enough because you're not going to see a lot of it. And I ended up buying it anyway to work on it. So it's just kind of weird how I've kind of turned over to where not even I didn't care about Seed, but I also just hated the Justice.
Like, I know, man. What's wrong with you?
Purple. Like you see the Art Rovo Gundam purple? That's purple. Okay.
What is wrong with this purple? This is like Char Aznable peak purple.
Okay. I see what you're getting out there. It has more of where the Char red is really pink. That Justice purple is really red.
There you go. Exactly. Oh. Boom.
You know what? I am liking it more and more. And you know what I'm liking that I didn't before? That giant
horn
because it goes with the shoulder.
It does. It kind of ties it all together.
Yeah. I love this about Gundam. I love just getting into more stuff. That's
see, a year from now, you're going to hear me talking about how much I love the G-Quix.
Or F-91. There's no way that's going to happen. It'll be crazy.
I do like the F-90. I'm not going to lie.
Okay. It'd be funny, though, if I go into like a hard like wing arc. Like, that would be just weird. I'm like obsessed with Trayson. Yeah. Okay. Well, let's move to some news. And which one should we? I want to do the fun one first because I don't know how long it's going to take me to talk about it. So let me move the screen share over. So the news broke about Sydney Sweeney being in the Gundam movie. And that was crazy. And it broke by this guy named Jeff Snyder. So I'm a big movie guy, even though I might not see every movie. I love behind the scenes production, blah, blah, blah. In fact, the reason I started Gundam Explained is because after I found out about Gundam, I started putting together like a pitch, like, okay, that needs to be made live action, like this whole time. And then, you know, as I was working on this, it was just in a Google sheet. There's the news about the movie and I'm like, oh, they're going to do it already. Well, maybe I should make a YouTube channel to tell everybody that there's going to be a movie and this is Gundam. It's so cool. That's kind of how it started. And, you know, this whole time, I've always followed this guy, Jeff Snyder. He's funny. He has this personality where he's like almost like a New Yorker, you know, because he can kind of be loud. But he's funny. He's nice. Anyway, he's kind of independently being a scooper, right?
Yeah.
You know, to get scoops.
And which brilliant branding, by the way, the In Snyder.
I know. Right? I know. It's great. And so he has a newsletter, theinsnyder.com. You could subscribe and then you can pay to get more stuff. But so the thing, this came out March 31st, right? And it was like Sydney Sweeney and talks for Gundam $7 million salary or whatever. And so there's a lot of interesting things going on with that. One is because it was the 31st, people were automatically assuming April Fool's Day. And for so many reasons, that wouldn't be the case. One, I know of this guy. I follow him. And he's been wrong before, but usually he owns up to it or it's more of, oh, no, something changed. Not that. And so I was like, okay, if he's.
And that detail is unique, too. Like that $7 million number.
Yeah. So
that's too specific.
Exactly. And I think that made sense right now because I think she was potentially shopping around for another project. She just did The Housemaid. It's in post-production and she got $7.5 million, which is less than $7 million, which goes to my theory that if this is a UC Gundam, she is getting, and I'll switch over to that other picture. I found a picture that really shows off why she looks like Sayla. Okay.
Sure.
For so many reasons. One is she does look younger than she is. I think she's 27 or something. I think, especially without the makeup, she could pull off. Oh, yeah. That's right.
I was going to say she was famous for being in Euphoria as a teenager. So, like, she's always kind of played down what her age is. So she's very flexible like that.
See, that is another interesting detail because obviously they if you're thinking about, okay, well then who is she going to play? You know, when we think of a girl that looks like her, it's like, oh, Sayla, especially $7.5 million for an actor to play. What?
And another interesting, I guess, you know, to lend credit to your theories, it's like she's coming off the back of the Madam Web movie.
Yeah.
Where, you know, that was probably her her one shot at getting into like the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Well, that's not going to get picked up for a sequel, and I'm sure that she's not going to get any crossover movies there. Now, what's interesting about this is if Gundam movie is successful, now she's booked for to have a franchise that she can.
Yeah. All through Double Zeta.
Yeah.
So, and that's a really good point you bring up, because I looked it up and I think in Madam Web, she made $200,000.
Oof.
Like, think about that. And then I was looking up another legendary movie, the Godzilla vs. Kong. The last one, the lead female made $700,000. Wow. So for legendary, that they're willing to pay Sydney Sweeney this much, this makes me think she is playing Sayla. And not just some random character. If it was some random character no one knew, I don't think they would be spending so much, or they would be going for this actress.
Of course, yeah.
Specifically, because this is just like perfect storm. The other thing, and you brought this to my attention. So the other thing is, okay, she's playing someone young, and then you brought up an actor that I never heard of before, Griffin Gluck.
Yeah, I didn't even know his name. We had to look him up.
Yeah, and when I looked at it, I'm like, that looks like a kid. He's 24, just 2 years younger or whatever than Sydney Sweeney. And so I think this just is an example of, oh, yeah, it's very easy. Hollywood can do this, where they can find an actor that can portray kind of a younger demeanor or a character, you know, in general.
And he's already got like a pretty impressive body of work under his belt, like so far. I mean, he's been in like a lot of like Netflix miniseries and movies and things like that. So
constantly working. So he seems like ripe for that type of actor to kind of have a breakout role.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah. That's really cool. And so, I think then like, so if we look, I want to back up real quick, 'cause I think the April Fool's thing was crazy, 'cause there were people that were just sure this was just a joke.
Yeah.
And I get it. It's so crazy because April 1st was also the same time company. And I don't remember this previously, but companies are releasing a lot of news because it's a new quarter. Maybe it just happened to fall on the day, you know, of whatever. I don't know how that works exactly. But you would think it would be the same day every year, right? But this is the first time that it's ever come about where, you know what, barely anyone's doing April Fools or actually telling you a lot of crazy news that's real.
Well, and I remember when they announced that the Gundam movie was going to start filming this month, everyone assumed it was going to be an April Fool's joke, because it's like, wait a second, they're going to start filming April 1st. And so basically now any rumors that you come across about like actors being in it or, you know, any of that stuff is going to be so much more credible because we know that they're on set and working on it right now.
So good point. I didn't even bring that up, that the original I think it was December or January notice. I think it was January. Jim Mickle directing. They said they're going to start filming April. April 1st. They said. And so this just lines up for the timing of this to be announced. And again, I always go back to it. I didn't watch all of Sweet Tooth, but the first episode is a narrated disaster scenario, which is literally the beginning of Gundam. To me, I'm just seeing so many cool things. So let's then say, and I feel like we've had this discussion on the show so many times, if this is UC Gundam, and I've heard too before, it's a strict adaptation, but that could have just been anyone filling it and they're just using words, you know, to explain it. I guess I wonder if she's getting paid $7.5 million. I think I'm answering my question. Do you see
a leading question?
Another big name showing up, but it might just be short. You know what I mean? Like Degwin might not have that much, so they can get like a well-known actor. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's like this is going to be such a silly comparison, but to me, it's like building a franchise sports team, right? Like you need some young people that you can pay a little bit less. You need a couple stars that are going to carry the franchise. And then maybe you need some senior veteran players that are going to come in and kind of help the young players get acclimated to the sport. Right. So if Sydney Sweeney's like your franchise star, you know, obviously that's why it makes so much sense for the amount that she's rumored to be being paid. for the clout that she already has and the audience that she'll be drawing, because obviously, like, you know, she draws money. She does strike me as like the franchise star. Now, they could probably get a couple of cameo stars that are more well established, but would probably have less screen time. So they might kick like three, yeah. $4 million out to, I don't know. I mean, Tom Cruise, somebody. I mean, I think Cruise is probably out of the price range, but you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see somebody like a, you know, one of these names that always kind of pops up, like a John Malkovich type.
Oh, Kevin
Bacon. You know what I mean? What's that?
Kevin Bacon.
Oh yeah. Kevin Bacon. Cause yeah, I mean, Kevin Bacon was, it was out of this world that he was in X-Men.
Yeah, I know. Exactly. And I've seen him do that recently where he'll be in something that he would be a good Kai if he was younger.
Right. And that's one of the things that I always bring up is, you know, everyone has their fan castings for Gundam. And it's like, you guys are thinking way too old. Like, you know, and of course, you know, if we were to hire stars to play every single role, you know, it's fun to do that as a fan casting, but like, it's completely unrealistic because you wouldn't be able to do that.
And I would see the limit as like, I could see them hiring someone in their late 30s to play Bright.
Exactly.
Like that would be like an extreme.
That's like the cutoff.
Yeah. And it would, and I think it would have to be some, so I feel like Bright is a very strong character and to kind of go back. The report said she's the female lead, as the female lead,
which is a very,
which means that there is a male lead that is the co-star. Which, so the other thing is, she's getting paid 0.5 million less for this movie than her previous role, where she was the lead. So that's like, okay, she's not the lead. And then the other thing I think we were discussing too is then if the lead is Amuro, it could be that he's getting paid less because it would be like kind of a younger actor.
Exactly.
I've seen anymore. So then I would think the Bright character would probably be someone that would be that they would want to have some sort of gravitas, not even presence, but even within the, I guess, cinema sphere, you know, people like, oh yeah. Yeah. But
I wonder if somebody like, and this is going to be a totally, forgive me, but
okay.
What about somebody like Adam Scott as Bright Noah? Because obviously a comedy actor, but he's gotten so much praise for his performance on Severance.
Okay.
In a dramatic role.
Okay. So knowing that he's a good actor, usually that ends up winning out in the end. A lot of times, like an actor you wouldn't think for a role would end up playing it. And it's like, oh wow. They, for me, the big one, even though this is voice acting, Troy Baker doing Indiana Jones or the Harrison Ford.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's insane. You didn't need AI. You didn't. And because it's an actor, they can really do something with it. So, yeah, because the person that I would want to play Bright, but they're too old, that I think is 100% mirror image. Patrick Wilson, I think is his name.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like
from Watchmen. And
yeah, Insidious. I feel like he even talks like him. Like, I guess the English dubbed guy. He talks right. Like, and I really like that.
Agreed.
You know, like, would you see Chris Pratt as Bright?
Chris Pratt, maybe, yeah.
Because he kind of has the younger, he can pull off the younger.
Or again, like a, you know, like a Penn Badgley from that Netflix show, You.
Oh, never.
Yeah, he, again, like, you know, he plays a serial killer, so he's okay. pretty good at, he's got some range there.
Well, who else would be a central when it comes to casting? It's like we need to make sure we have someone that can kind of anchor this. I feel like Bright would be one. And I do think Sayla would be that too. Amuro, I feel like you could just get away with the kid angle, kind of like a puppy dog angle, you know?
Yeah. But, well, and it's one of those things. Like, I mean, a perfect example is like you look at a movie like the Lord of the Rings trilogy. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, you had like established Ian McKellen. He's obviously, you know, had tons of roles under his belt, you know, qualified stage actor. And then you had like some of the audience draws, people like Liv Tyler and, now I forgot his name, Elijah Wood, but like people like Orlando Bloom and Viggo Mortensen that were lead characters, total unknowns.
Yeah. and became very popular.
And then delivered an iconic performance. And so I think that that's what they're looking for, is an unknown that can deliver that kind of performance for Amuro.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up Lord of the Rings, because even though I didn't watch them, because I don't know why, I just can't get into them. Again, I'm into filmmaking, so all the behind the scenes, I love the director. I know there's all these weird reasons. Anyway, that is an example of making a film well, especially the Lord of the Rings, especially three movies. Like, that, there was so much to that, and you need that type of person to be, you know, working on Gundam and Star Wars. But
yeah, exactly.
The when it comes, so Bright, Sayla, who do you think would also be another good anchor character? I mean,
Char.
Yeah.
Gotta be, yeah. You know, you need a villain that's going to be able to really.
Okay, so, and I'm trying to do this from the angle of the facts we've received so far of what is their strategy. What type of actor would they want to hire for Char? Do you think they would go for an unknown? Would they go older?
I kind of feel like they have to.
Yeah.
Even if they wanted to have someone that was closer in age, I think that just the level of experience, and you don't want to, you can always have a protagonist fumble their performance. You don't want to have your villain.
Yeah. Cause then no one feels like there's any real stakes. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. And and here's the other thing too. And this goes back to why I was so excited about when they first announced the movie. And then I wanted to make a channel, like, the type of storytelling and characterization they can portray in this Gundam live action movie, I think, is rarely seen in film, especially anymore. Just the dynamic between, you know, who your main protagonist is, which is pretty young. And then you have your main bad guy, but that's also related to this, you know, the sister that's on the white base while we have mechs fighting in space. Like, and then the new type stuff, like how they, again, if this is UC, watch them tomorrow say it's Wing and she's Relena. But because now that you're saying that she could play a high schooler, it's like, oh crap, they're going to remake that scene.
Where she's they're not coming to my birthday party.
no, but I feel like, here's my thing. I feel like if they do UC, the result, I feel like, would feel like Denis Villeneuve's Dune.
Mm.
You know, that sort of thing where it's like, I would be disappointed. You know, the first Godzilla 2014 with Gareth Edwards versus this last, I don't know if you saw the last Godzilla Kong. It goes from, you know, being serious to then being like out of this world goofy.
Yeah, didn't they give him like a mecha hand?
Yeah. King Kong has a mecha hand. And like, here, I think you can make that work, but it was just so insane in the movie where I'm like, oh, come on. But I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. I think the thing that just got me in that movie, even though, you know, the Godzilla vs. Kong, it's where they are fighting in the center of the earth where the gravity is. So they're like flying around each other, all, not only Godzilla and King Kong, but then Mothra and like some giant white dragon and then like some other, and they're all like a giant gorilla, and they're all like anti-gravity fighting. It's silly. Something that's got to be seen, but it's like, did we need that?
Right.
I feel like they're like, well, we don't have anything else to do.
You know? Well, I mean, you know, it goes to like the that movie Twisters, where it's like, oh well, how can we make tornadoes more scary? Oh, what if we have a scene where the tornado tears through an oil refinery and it catches fire, and then you have a flaming tornado? It's like, you know, you literally jump the Sharknado.
They did the other thing to add the fireworks into the tornado. It's like, what can you do to make it, give it a skin?
the DLC, the disaster DLC. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, you know, so at the end of the day, I feel like I'm getting so excited with the context that this is UC. But it might not be UC.
But I think that if this rumor is true, that pretty much guarantees it's not Build Fighters.
Why?
I mean, can you imagine Sydney Sweeney like being a model kit builder? That's like,
okay, you brought up another good point.
I remember the rumor last year was like, oh, well, Timothy Chalamet is going to be a character named Kit. Like,
yeah. No. You actually do bring up a good point. If we were to look at, Sydney Sweeney is in a position right now where she can play any role. And I think they wouldn't have a salary for someone to be $7.5 million if it was a gun to build fighters.
Exactly.
Okay. Okay. I really think that does. I'm glad you brought that part up because I did not think of that.
So we don't know what it is, but we know what it's definitely not.
I like that. If they were to do here's something I'll throw out here. And I actually made this mistake because I've been seed mode. When I first saw that, she could play Lacus. And I was like, no, I meant Sela.
No, you meant Lacus.
Lacus. Yeah, there you go. But would that be a thing? Because
if they went seed.
Well, do you think, let's put it this way. Do you think Sydney Sweeney would want to play a character like that? Knowing she knows what she is, but Sela seems like it would be a more interesting character for her. I think that's just another level, another factoid.
Yeah, no, for sure. I do think that she's probably at a point in her career where she's looking for something that's kind of sticky, because she's done a lot of different genres, different projects. And I mean, one of the things I like about her is that she's self-aware. She has a sense of humor about what people find appealing about her, which is hilarious to me. And so I think that a role like this would be, like I said, she's not going to get that Marvel Cinematic Universe role. I doubt that, Warner Brothers is going to come knocking and ask her to be in the Justice League. So like, this is one of those like, hey, for $7 million, I'd gamble on this, like maybe jumpstarting my career, not even jumpstarting. Cause that's not really her career is already going well for
her. Right. It's more of finding that, what's her tentpole,
Exactly. Yeah.
Cause Tom Cruise has Mission Impossible right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And very few actors and actresses these days are capable of getting that role. There's just not a lot of franchises to go around that it's like, hey, we're going to guaranteed sign you on for 9 movies. Yeah. Like,
especially with how the movie industry has been and everything. I'm glad I talked more about this with you because it really does make me think more and more, what type of role would she be picking? And it's not just going to be a Lacus or a Lacus. It's not going to be a build fighter thing. I think the role of Sela is cool. Like, Sela's a cool character anyways. It makes sense. Yeah. Well, let me ask you, are there other female characters that have her look that have really cool stories in Gundam?
And see, this is where it's like looks don't necessarily matter. Obviously, Sydney Sweeney plays a female boxer. And had her hair curled and dark. Yeah. Like she hit the gym pretty hard and like did like a total body transformation to play this female boxer in a movie that's coming out here soon. So, and like I said, it's she made that funny joke that was like, it was one of those YouTube interviews and someone was like, hey, what's something about you that people don't know? And she goes, oh, well, most people think that I'm just a blonde with big boobs. But the truth is I'm actually brunette. So
that's good.
That said, yeah, so that's what I mean when I say she's self-aware. She's very funny about that kind of thing.
What's the 7 point?
She could play like a Mirai.
Yeah, that's true. But
like the blonde hair is not a guarantee.
But here's a good question. Would there be pushback on ethnicity? Because Sela is the one that you can easily go, I think she's supposed to be white anyway. Sure. Amuro, I think it's up in the air, but Caucasian, but I think Mirai, isn't she half Japanese, half Filipino or something like that? Or she's
supposed to be, with a name like Yashima.
Yeah. So I would like them to be as close to it, but to be honest, like, I feel like sometimes how maybe these characters are portrayed in anime, I might be just assuming a race or something. And it's, not even,
I don't see race. Okay. There's definitely some of that, to be considered for sure. Because
some of that tit be considered. I heard it tit. I heard tit like that. I don't know. That was a bad joke. But we're just talking about this actress that,
right. I'm over here sounding like Chevy Chase in Christmas Vacation.
Oh, Well, yeah, that's a good, well, that's the other thing too. At the end of the day, like, I think, you know, she's really popular right now because I guess a lot of guys are really into how she looks and all that. And yeah. It, for me, she comes off as just that younger character. Like, to me, I see, you know, if it was like Scarlett Johansson, I would be distracted. Let me put it that way. But because it's a character like her, I think that's great, you know. I wonder if then that downplay. So that's the whole thing. Since it's been announced, I hear all the time that, like, you know, guys are all over her, you know, because of whatever. So I wonder if the other part of this role is, you know, Sayla is not a sexy character. She's just a person, right, that's there. So, and it's not really about a relationship, even though there's that Amuro stuff in the novel. So that'd be cool if they, you know, but
yeah. And I mean, I kind of hope that they don't go that, like, I hope, right, that if it is UC, I hope that they stay true to the show where that relationship doesn't, yeah.
That way they can introduce the other elements, because otherwise that would change the trajectory. We already have a G-Quux for that.
Exactly right.
Okay. I feel like I could talk about this topic forever, so I'm going to move on. I am just, like I said, guys, I am so excited. We've got news like this. Again, I'm not familiar with her work, but she's well talked about with her acting chops, getting offered that much. It makes me feel like Gundam is in good hands. So, whatever it is, even if it's Wing.
Especially if it's Wing.
Dude, what if it's randomly Gundam Age, the movie? We're like, what? And everyone's like, what?
Boom, got him.
You know what would be crazy? If it would switch for Mercury?
And she's, I mean, that Coletta? Well, I think she'd probably play Mio if they were doing Witch.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, no, for sure. I honestly,
No, but I think it goes back to your main point that I think really helps this whole thing is considering the amount she's getting paid, what the role would be for that amount. I think that's a really good point. Okay. We're going to move on now. So earlier I was talking about this Bubblegum Crisis DVD from Animigo, and shout out, I think it's Obelie that was posting in Discord of when Animigo's YouTube was doing their part one, and this is their part two of the anime business, and it's so fascinating.
Yeah.
I have it. Let me make sure I have the thing turned on. Okay, let me play it. Oh, man. Yeah. Okay, this is the dude that ran it, right? And this is him talking about trying to work with Japan.
Which is what you are in the anime business in the U.S., you have to accept that you're in the middle between folks in Japan and the consumer in the U.S. You have to be willing to play that role. People are saying, when are you going to release, you know, Double Zeta Gundam? And you go to Sunrise, everyone really wants to really see Double Zeta Gundam. And the answer is always the same. No. You know, we're not going to do that right now. Okay.
And so that's very interesting, right? Because I feel like when I got into Gundam, the thing that was left out for as an American was Double Zeta. And then I watched it. I was like, wow, even though that it has that harsh, rough beginning in a way.
Yeah.
It's still the Gundam I like. UC Gundam. And from what I understand from what was going on was, you know, it was at a time where DVD sales were declining in the US. But because of Japan kind of being its own isolated economy, they were like, well, DVD sales aren't doing good in the US anymore, so why would we want to and they're like, well, why still do DVDs? Do streaming. And they're like, well, no, we still have good DVD sales. So it's interesting because you almost can't blame Japan because they are working within their market and they're satisfied with it. So that it is interesting to see that. And what although with this new interview, the Gundam movie, these releases, it makes me think they could go back to Double Zeta and do a proper dub. And I think they should. I think more people would be willing to watch it if that's the case.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, we talked about it before, you know, just yesterday. Like, I know that people hate it, but, you know, AI translation and AI dubbing is going to happen. And so if they're going to make a minimal investment to determine whether or not something, like, if you're a risk averse company, then you're not going to drop, you know, a couple million dollars to have something dubbed and made the right way, you know? Right.
Yeah.
I say that in quotes, but
I know what you mean.
So there's never been a time where it's been more cost effective for companies to take a chance on something that they're not entirely sure is going to pan out. And so Double Zeta being something that they're not confident in.
I know, crazy. But again, it gives me hope that there's more possibilities. Here's something else that's, oh, and by the way, do you remember that legendary Kickstarter comic for Gunpla Battlelog?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if this is true, but I think it was this guy's idea of just trying to further get, somehow get more Gundam stuff in the United States. So you can't, you know, knock him for
trying.
The
first time I left the anime business was my choice. The second time I was asked to leave. So I felt karmically things had balanced out. And I wasn't actually that upset by the decision. It was, for me, a good ending, or what I thought was an ending. It's never totally over. You never really get out. Because I went on to Legendary Entertainment, which has become one of the primary film companies that handles IP from Japan, including Godzilla, Pokemon. We have a Gundam movie in development, a deal we did with Kenny Adomi.
When I saw that, again, this was right, I was watching this right before the Sydney Sweeney news drop. Just hearing someone else in the industry acknowledge the Gundam movie, I was like, I need that. And then after that, the Sydney Sweeney. I'm telling you, this stuff, it's taken off. I'm excited.
And there are very few people that are willing to fill a role like this guy that, you know, and it's funny because he even alludes to it where he says, like, you never really get out. And it's because how many people are willing to be in that middleman role that you have to constantly disappoint your target audience, your consumers, and you have to constantly, like, go and ask for more from the people that are telling you no. Like,
yeah,
that is a rough position to be in.
So his name is Robert Napton. I feel like if we ever hear that name, see that guy, we should say, you know, thanks and all that for helping getting anime over here and then continuing to work even for Legendary right now as we're making a Gundam movie. That is just, that's awesome. Well, cool. So again, this is if you go to the Animego YouTube, A-N-I-M-E, like anime, but then I-G-O. I feel like it's probably worth being subscribed to. They have the part one, part two. I think on their website, they have a paid, like you can buy the documentary or something. It has more stuff like behind the scenes. And yeah, as someone that has now been getting into anime, it was good to see something like that to get context around it.
For sure.
The other thing too, I realized too, was when he was talking about, or it was a different guy from the previous one, talking about the early stuff that was localized versus that gap. And then later it's almost seemed like there was generations of people, you know, that would like cartoons, but then as they moved on, it was like forgotten, you know, which I find that interesting, you know, forgotten art. Okay. So next thing we're going to bring up here is I wanted to really quickly talk about the mobile armors from Twilight Axis because they're pretty cool. They're featured in the end and we never see them. And I think mobile armors were a cool idea, you know, in Gundam.
Yeah.
So we get this thing. It's called the RX-78KU-01 Kirwinol. And it seems like it's symmetrical in shape. It's very similar. I think, let's see, is the Dendrobium, that one is offset, right? Or am I thinking of the Sentinel?
Well, both of them. Both of them have like a beam cannon on one side and then like the radome on the other. So
yeah,
it does look like the Dendrobium.
Yeah, it almost does, but almost like symmetrical kind of version. And what's interesting, it has the G Falcon. Yeah, G Fighter. From the original Mobile Suit, it has those colors going on. Because one is double X. I think the G Falcon is double X. G Fighter is. Yeah, okay. And it has those colors, which is neat, but also you can probably barely see it on this video. There's the Tristan that actually plugs into it, which is also just a badass feature for robots. Yeah,
I love whenever there's like a docking, like mobile suit that sits inside of a mobile armor. That's always cool.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's cool because you see both sides utilize that stuff in different degrees.
And spoiler, that's probably a good reason to go watch The Electric State on Netflix.
Oh, because I never finished it.
Yeah. Well, then I won't spoil anything there.
Well, no, because I wasn't planning to, but I don't know. Okay, so this was developed behind the scenes by Burnham. So this was like that other company that was kind of doing contract work. but I guess they're getting all the technical data from what Anaheim Electronics or whatever. You know, I'm sure they had some sort of contract. They're like, hey, the Federation's paying us to do this. Let's work on a mobile suit.
Yeah.
But Mega Beam Cannon, Micro Missile Pod, Mega Beam Rifle, 5.2 Beam Pod, Large Claw Arm, and a Large Beam Saber. Oh, yeah, and here's some shots from it in that Twilight Axis, where the thing about Twilight Axis is the animation could be a little iffy. You could tell some shots, you know, had to be a little cheaper. But there are some good shots like this, which I think really showed off. Let's see. The Kerlinal is named after a character from Tristan and Isolde, one of Richard Wagner's operas. So I guess the basis of Twilight Axis anyway. So it goes in deep. Never looked into that.
It's like Advance of Zeta being so heavily influenced by Watership Down. The bunny one, Watership Down.
Yeah, Watership Down.
The bunny one, you know.
Which is on Netflix, by the way, or a version of it. And it has John Boyega in it, I think. Voice.
Wow.
I think so, doing the voice acting. I could have just made that up. But anyway, the Kerlinal is remarkably similar to the RX-78 GP-03 Gundam Dendrobium in terms of design, down to the large beam gun mounted on the right side of the high mobility packs that the Dendrobium also has. It, however, does not have an I-field generator and elaborately mounted weaponry within the storage units. Okay. So, again, that's the one that Tristan goes in. Pretty cool. Again, kind of stuff from UC that's not talked about too much. Now, here's the one I got to say is pretty badass, even though I'm a Fed all the way. This is pretty much like a Sazabi as a mobile armor.
Or like the Nightingale.
Okay. Yeah. It has more of that Nightingale elongness to it. But the tail, that reminds me of the I can't name anything. After 7 o'clock Central Time. The red dragon dude from Wing.
Oh, the Epion?
Epion, there you go.
There you go.
Epion sectioned off tail, which is badass to see in UC. And this looks like the dude that draws Advance of Zeta stuff drew this.
It kind of reminds me of like the Big Rang too.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it has the two like arms on the side and it's actually holding shield. And they're not like arms, or they call them the manipulators or whatever. I guess they call them that anyway. But interesting stuff, especially like this yellow part sticking out in the front. I wonder if it's supposed to take on a bird or something. It's called the Ahava Aziru.
Which, man, I hate when they do that kind of thing, because it's like you have the Alpha Aziru, you have the Beta Aziru, and then now you have the Ahava Aziru. Like,
yeah, let's see what that
means. Why do you call it like the Delta Aziru or the...
Well, yeah, I was going to see if that has a name that's related to Tristan and Isolde or Isolde, whatever that story, but could I don't be. Think so. I think, this mobile armor was left incomplete with an axis. The unit was later reactivated hastily by Arlette to fight against the Burnham mobile suits. It engaged the RX-78K. Okay, so in Twilight Axis, when they're on Axis, for some reason I thought they found the Sazabi. Or was it they found the Sazabi?
I mean, it's there, but it's not like they activated or anything.
Okay, so they're not okay. So when they said they found this mobile armor, they probably in Axis, they probably had a whole bunch of stuff still, weaponry and all that, and they just grabbed that. And but probably showed the Sazabi just for member berry purposes.
You know how they do.
Wasn't it too where she like was trained or worked under Char just for a little bit, so she got to know him and yeah.
Yeah, there's like a little connection there that.
It's not as interesting because, like you said, the name kind of doesn't fit, but also it doesn't seem like it's related to the source material. So,
they didn't even make references to the thing that they were.
Search what Ahava is, but no, it looks like it's a lotion. that's interesting. So it consists at the tail funnel consists of 10 funnels attached to each other end to end. So that is pretty cool.
So that's even cooler than the Epion.
Yeah, it already was, but no, I'm joking. I love the Epion. I have that real grade.
Yeah. So good.
Yeah. So this is like, to be honest, this is something that I think should kind of maybe be some sort of, if not a mobile kit, maybe released as another line that they do, you know, because again, it's like the Elmeth, where there's these neat machines that don't always get any sort of representation, you know.
Yeah, like we were just talking about, I mean, Twilight Axis doesn't get any representation outside of just the Tristan.
Yeah. And speaking of actually the bits and all that, you have up on your Patreon the
Elmeth.
The Elmeth, yeah. And it was 1/1200
scale. Yeah. Yeah, 1/1200 scale.
And it comes with, was it 8 bits? How many was it?
Well, as many bits as you want.
Oh, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, you can print them as many. And if you wanted to make them, you know, high grade scale, it's you just multiply the scale by 9, so 900% size.
Which would be insane. And I'm sure someone would do that. In fact, you know, you should go on Twitter and you know, comment to those guys that build the white bases.
Yeah.
To be like, hey,
here you go. It's,
yeah, that that would be cool.
One of these days I'll have to invest in a larger print bed, you know.
Yeah, printer. So what would it take? Like, if you wanted to be able to make these larger pieces that are kind of in that scale, is it like a mix of probably multiple beds or just one big bed? Or
yeah, I mean, probably breaking it up into much smaller parts. The problem is with some of the mobile armors, you know, like for instance, you mentioned, cause you have that Nightingale, the high grade, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's like, there's a lot of like large single mold parts that are just hollow. And it's like, you wouldn't want to break up those into little smaller parts just so that they would fit on my tiny print bed.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
But yeah, the Elegoo Saturn, I think, is one of those ones that's got like, you know, it's like a 1 foot by 2 foot by 2 foot build volume, so you could print like large
Hot Toys.
Yeah,
just make hot toys,
man.
But like, around how much do those go for? Are we talking
probably like $700-$800? I think I don't know off the top of my head. I mean, they're not insane by any means. There's a 3D printer from Hagears that's much more expensive. Yeah, I mean, $500 for the Elegoo Saturn.
And is that, because I know you were telling me how you were using like a certain type of resin. Is it like that with the Elegoo Saturns? Like, they have their specific resin they want you to use, or could you use whatever?
No, you can use whatever. I will say that, like, I've gotten away. I will no longer use cheap resins just because they never perform well.
Which work were you working on that you figured that out? Just stuff recently, or?
Yeah, I think it was like probably a year ago that I was using things from like Mika 3D and a couple of other like bargain resin brands. But then once I finally got some Soriatech and some Resi One resins, like, those never had a problem.
That's cool. I, you know, one day I'm going to get back into that stuff, cause it's just so fun to make stuff here. But, so what are you working on, or is there something going to be working on this weekend?
Yeah. Actually, so I just posted over in the supporters chat, but I just started a project that I hope I'll have done, you know, by the time the baby comes, and you guys will be excited about it. With GQuux premiering next week, I thought, hey, why don't I do something GQuux related? And I'm definitely not going to do any mobile suits, because obviously the mobile suits disgust me. But Shuji's little pet, the little cube spider,
oh yeah,
rides on his head. I was like, well, let's just make one of those, and I might even make that 1-to-1 scale so that people can wear it on their heads or something.
Dude, that is a great idea. I think you should do that ASAP.
Oh yeah.
Okay, well, speaking of GQuux, we'll end it with this. I totally forgot to mention. So, you know, GQuux is supposed to premiere on Amazon on Tuesday, Central Time, 10:30 a.m. Okay? So, if that's the case, luckily that's around my work lunch, I'm going to do a watch-along. I'll stream a watch-along for that. I'll do it like with Requiem for Vengeance. Well, obviously I can't show it, but I'll try to have like the time so you see where I'm at. Now, this is just assuming it's going to drop then, because what it sounds like, I'll see where it says around. It'll be around that time. So I have no idea, but I would love to do that if that's the case. I should have done that with Witch for Mercury.
Because those new episodes dropped on Sundays, right?
Yeah. And I would sit there, watch, take notes, do my research, and then do a video. But yeah. I guess we'll head out. Everyone, this was fun. Thanks a lot. I am so pumped talking about Gundam movie stuff. I cannot wait for this movie to drop and all the news that comes out. And
here, man.
I talked to the dude, and he answered back that I was like, try if you find get any information, send it to me, and I will blast it on YouTube with your name. You know, it's like, hey, you give me Gundam info, I'll blast your name everywhere. So hopefully that will work out.
It's a good deal.
Yeah, well, heading out. All thanks for watching. Have a good weekend. We'll talk later.
Cheers.